Hi, this is Allison Sheridan of the NoSilicast podcast, hosted at podfeet.com, a technology geek podcast with an ever-so-slight Apple bias. Today is Monday, September 3rd, 2018, Labor Day, and this is show number 696. Well, that's why we have the live chat room. Jerry just pointed out that the first time I said this, I said it was September 2nd. So you are hearing the second time I've recorded this important announcement of the beginning of the show. Well, as you know by now, Apple's next big announcement date is on Wednesday, September 12th at 10 a.m. Pacific time. As we've done before, Steve and I will be in the live chat room to compare thoughts while we watch with any NoSilla castaways who want to join us. There won't be any video from me. This is all just text chat so we can pay attention. I know there are podcasters who like to talk over the video, but I kind of like to watch the video and listen to the video and then just text chat when we have time. If you've never been in the live show before, maybe because of time zones, the show is at an inconvenient time, this is a great way to get your feet wet and meet the friendly and enthusiastic NoSilla castaways. The chat can be found in an app called Discord, which you can download from discordapp.com. You can get that for just about any operating system known to woman. The live chat is found at podfeet.com/chat. So after you get Discord app, you can go to that site and you can actually use Discord at the web, or you can bring it into your Discord app itself. You'll follow the directions. Everybody else has been able to figure it out pretty quickly, so I think you're up to the challenge. I really hope you guys will join us. It's quite a bit of fun. Chit-chat across the pond this week was Bart Boost Shots with Programming by Stealth, installment 61 of X. We're still having a lot of fun with Bootstrap, this time learning two new classes. We learned how to make jumbotrons. I mean, that's just fun to say. Jumbotrons are those big images with a call to action on them that all the cool kids are using today on their websites. We also learned about how to make badges, like the kind you see showing unread messages on Gmail or to show new on a post. The lesson was pretty easy and the homework sounds really fun. But just in case, luckily Dorothy already did the homework, so if it's too hard, I'm just going to cheat off her paper anyway. You can find this installment of Programming by Stealth, of course, over at podfeet.com. And Bart has his amazing tutorials over at bartbouchats.ie. And of course, there's links in the show notes to all of that. Before I play this next review, I want to give you a little bit of a setup. The review is from our youngest NoSilla castaway, the youngest that I know of anyway, Toby from the live chat room. The app he's going to review is an app that allows you to connect MIDI pad controllers, MIDI keyboards, or MIDI drums to your Mac and control them directly. He received a Launchpad Mini by Novation and is using the app Melodics from melodics.com to control it. After he's done explaining it in his own unique style, I'll give you a little bit more information about it.
Hey, NoSilla Castaways, TJ here, back with another review, finally. I'll be reviewing a product called Melodics. Sorry about the background noise, that's my sister. Melodics claims to be able to teach you to play drums, piano, or MIDI pad. Why do I say claims? No reason. It does exactly what it says and is well worth the $10 a month that it costs. Yes, Allison, it's a subscription. You can download it at melodics.com. It has a nice color scheme and the app is really well polished. It has no monthly fees, that is if you pay yearly, which leads me to the strange price. Shut up! It has no monthly fees, that is if you pay yearly, which leads me to the strange pricing. It's $20 a month if you pay monthly, but it's, $10 if you pay yearly. What? That's weird. Starts off with the basics, but you can skip to any level and you learn at your own rate. It's easy for anyone to set up. Just get your adapter or 30 if you have the new MacBook Pro, and your MIDI device. Plug them in. The setup is so easy. For piano, you press the first and last keys. Done. A Launchpad, you do nothing except Launchpad Mini, in which you have to press the flashing ones on the screen. And a drum kit, you just hit any drum. And it's set up. It's so easy. It's incredibly easy to set up. I don't even know how they managed to do it. I have a Launchpad Mini and a nice MIDI piano here. It's an Idiot Key velocity-sensitive Roland something that also... the pedal scrolls up and down. It's the up and down arrows. But anyway... oh, yeah, and there is a free one. Download it at melodics.com. It's a completely free... but you are limited to 5 minutes a day and not all the courses. Yep, that's my review of Melodics. And Yeah, and it doesn't, and another thing, it doesn't punish you for making mistakes. It has plenty of songs. It starts off the, yeah, I already said this stuff. Anyway, so, that's it. And this was sent over Firefox, this is sent to Allison over a cool thing called Firefox Send, which allows you to send any file of any limit, for completely free. It's by Mozilla. And it all is in test pilot, but it allows you to, essentially, and the file gets deleted after 24 hours, or 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, or 20 downloads. Okay? So, I might have a review of that. I probably won't, but I might. All right, bye!
Well, thank you so much, Toby, for that review. That was fantastic. I'm sorry, but I think my favorite parts are when you yell at your sister to be quiet when you're doing your reviews. I love that. Well, I downloaded Melodix on my Mac to see kind of what Toby was talking about. Now, while I have no MIDI devices, the software let me install and use it to control a virtual piano. It's limited to 13 keys, but if I log in, it would unlock 20 free lessons, which I assume are going to teach me how to play the piano. I haven't done that yet, but maybe you want to dig a little deeper and try it out yourself. Melodix is available at melodix.com.
Dumb.
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 Dumb questions.
Dumb questions. Dumb questions.
How do I? What is?
How come I always have to?
It's time for Dumb Question Corner.
I've missed the Dumb Question Corner music. Well, I'm sure all of you out there listen all the way to the very bitter end of the NoSillaCast, just in case there's something completely different at the end, right? Absolutely. Well, then I'm sure you remember when I did the shout-out asking for dumb questions last week. I mentioned that Linda Goucher had sent in a bunch of them a while ago, and I hadn't answered her yet. She piled them up and sent them right after MacStock Expo, and let's start with one of them right now. She wrote, in NoSillaCast number 690, about an hour and 32 minutes in, between you and Bart were talking about passwords on sticky notes on routers and such, and you mentioned in passing that you use a QR code to let folks visiting you get on your home network. How do you do that? Maybe something on Apple's password manager that I don't know about since I use 1Password? Well, I have to say, I did not remember that part of the conversation, so I went back and I listened. Sure enough, Bart said that he does use a QR code to give people his crazy long Wi-Fi password. I didn't have a chance to ask him exactly how he did that, but I figured out a really cool way or cool ways to get this done. First of all, let's make sure everyone knows what we mean by QR codes. QR stands for Quick Response, and it was a method of creating a two-dimensional barcode for the automotive industry in Japan in 1994. Kaylee will like that part. These are the little white square boxes with geometric black lines and squares on them that you can scan with your camera, and then interesting things happen. The basic idea is that you can encode information into these 2D barcodes that can be decoded by your phone's camera. The cool thing is that the open source community has come up with some de facto standards on how to encode different types of information so they can be interpreted properly by your phone. For example, a properly encoded URL will prompt your phone to open a web page. You can encode your contact information, and if properly encoded, it will prompt the phone to add it to the person's contacts. The ZXING project on GitHub, I have no idea how to pronounce that. I wish the letters were the other way around, but like Z-sting. Anyway, ZXING project is a set of libraries where these encoding schemes are described. The format for encoding a Wi-Fi password is quite simple. And most of this is in capital letters. It's Wi-Fi colon T colon WPA colon S colon the name of your network colon P colon the password for your network followed by two semicolons. That's right. The last ones are semicolon. The first two are colons. Anyway, you don't need to remember that. It's in the show notes, of course. Let's break it down. Wi-Fi colon T colon WPA means Wi-Fi of type WPA as the authentication type, or the encryption type, I should say. Then S colon and your network name is the network SSID. Next, you've got P colon my password is where you enter your password. There's a few more parameters possible, but that's enough for most of us. Okay, so now what do we do with this newly written text that I just told you how to write? Do a simple search for QR code generator, and you'll be given tons of sites that will take this text string and turn it into a QR code. One example is I'm going to spell this out a little bit, the-QRcode-generator.com, of course, link in the show notes. If you plop that text string into any of those sites, It'll blorp out the QR code for you. Now take a screen snapshot of the QR code or download it, you know, copy image, whatever you want to do, and print it out. With an iPhone, people simply have to point their camera at the QR code and they will be asked if they want to join your network. It'll show the name of the real name of your network, but it won't show them the password. So that's kind of nice too. Not only do they not have to type it in, you're not actually telling them what it is. They tap OK and they're on your network. On some Android phones, they can also simply use the camera, but other ones that might require them to have a QR code scanner application. There are also sites and easy search away that are designed specifically to create QR codes for Wi-Fi networks without knowing this double secret formula I just described. I know I could have told you that up front, but what fun would that have been? And actually comes in handy at the very end of this discussion topic. I would recommend going directly to the open source QR code generated by the ZXING project, the project that created the standards. You can find their QR code generator at zxing.appspot.com. And of course, link in the show notes. Anyway, this site has a nice little pull down to select what kind of QR code you want, what kind of password protection you have, and everything else I described. Plus, you can choose how big to make the barcode. I like doing it here because it gives you a download link to the QR code and a URL embed link if you don't want to host it yourself. It also shows you the code that we talked about earlier. Now, you might feel weird about putting the SSID and password of your network into an online service. I would suggest that the danger is incredibly low that anyone could do anything nefarious with this information. Now, we do know we're being digitally tracked around the internet and digitally fingerprinted, so someone with evil intent could figure out who you are and where you live. But they would also have to fly, drive, or walk to your house and stand outside your house to get into your network. That on top of trolling all the QR code generation sites to find you in the first place and, find you putting in your Wi-Fi credentials. I think that sounds like a pretty low risk. But if it does give you pause, you might want to use a standalone application for this instead. The Mac App Store has a lot of them, but oddly, they're not free. Most have no ratings at all, and those that have ratings have 2 stars. In the iOS App Store, there are plenty of good ones. Don't know why they don't have them for the Mac. Anyway, I got one called Crafter, get it? Crafter, but it's a Q. Anyway, it's free with a $3 in-app purchase that I think just gets rid of ads. Crafter lets you generate many different types of QR codes, including Wi-Fi network logins. You simply enter the SSID and password, and it generates a QR code for you. Crafter also does URLs, location, contact cards, and events. It'll even generate codes that will make a phone call, send a text message, send an email, or send a tweet. I have no idea the use case for that last one, though. Anyway, it'll generate a QR code for an iTunes app URL, which would be really cool if you're an app developer and want one on your card. I tried creating a QR code with Crafter with my Wi-Fi turned off on my iPad, and it actually did still work, so I assumed for the generation of the code that they're not generating with the internet. Now, I was going to say that I couldn't promise they're not passing the information along, but I tweeted out the link to this article, and after I posted it, Oat Grunin and I were chatting about it on Twitter, and the developer of Crafter, Karim Erkan, responded to my tweet, and he said this: Crafter does all creation locally and does not transmit any of the information anywhere. On iOS 10 and earlier, we needed a generated profile to connect to scanned Wi-Fi hotspots, so it was generated for one-time reading on Crafter servers, but with iOS 11, that's no longer needed. So, I think that's pretty cool. They got the developer's attention to just tell us that. With an iPhone, this whole QR code generation is a lot of folderol, though, now that we have a built-in way of sharing. If you come to my house and want on my Wi-Fi network with your iOS device, as soon as you get challenged for the password, all of my devices will light up asking if I want to share the password with you. I only have to tap share and you never even see the code. It doesn't seem to offer to share the password 100% of the time, so I might do this QR code generating anyway, because that might be easier in the long run. Now, if you do have Android friends, no judging here. Having a QR code for your Wi-Fi password does make sense, especially if it's as long and complicated as it should be. I tested with my Nexus 5X just to see if the Apple devices would offer the password, and they did not, so the QR code would be handy. Now, the camera on the 5X also didn't know anything about QR codes, so I had to download a QR code generator, or a QR code reader, I should say, from the Google Play Store. In like a few seconds, I found a 4.5-star app with plenty of downloads. I installed the app, scanned my barcode, and I was able to join the Wi-Fi network. Even with that extra step of on Android of having to install a QR code reader app, it took far less time than it would have to type in my long, complex Wi-Fi password. I learned a lot about this technology in order to answer Linda's question, and I had a lot of fun doing it. I plan on QR coding everything. Maybe my next batch of business cards will just be piles of QR codes. One for each podcast URL in iTunes, one for the website, one for my contact info. I mean, this is going to be awesome. Well, after I wrote up this article and I posted it on Twitter, Matt Casolini replied with an even more interesting way to create QR codes. He suggested using or creating a workflow on iOS to do it. Now, you know, I've been looking for a reason to like workflow, and he may have just found it. He sent me two workflows. One of them makes a URL into a QR code, and I've got a link to it in the show notes, and the second one makes a Wi-Fi login code. I took a quick look at these, and without memorizing what they did, I realized I could probably make my own. So I tried creating my own workflow, and I did it. My solution is not nearly as elegant as the ones Matt sent over, but they do meet my purposes. The one for a Wi-Fi password that he sent asks you all the right questions, things like, is there a password and what encryption is it using? But I'm going to be making them for myself, so I know they'll have a password and will be WPA2 encryption, so I'm not going to have to put that in. Workflow does have a QR code generator as a built-in action, but it took me a little bit to understand the interface of Workflow and be able to find it, which is why I struggled a little bit creating it. But once I did that, I knew more about making workflows, so that was fun. The fun thing about the way to make the workflow yourself is that the code that I explained at the very beginning of this article is exactly what you use to take the input from the user and then generate the QR code. So I told you that was going to be important later on, and it is. Since I wrote it myself and I tested it in airplane mode and it still worked, I knew for certain that this one was not phoning home. And now I have printed out QR codes for all three of the networks you need to be able to do anything at my house. One of the easiest ways to support the Podfeet podcast, other than telling your friends to watch the show, is to click on the Amazon links in the show notes when something I talk about intrigues you. Let's take Toby's review of Melodix. I mentioned that he got a Launchpad Mini from Novation, so I put an Amazon affiliate link in the show notes to it. You might be curious what it does and what it looks like and how much it costs. If you click on that link and then buy it during that session on Amazon, a small percentage will go to help the show. But guess what else? If you don't buy the Launchpad Mini, but while you're there, you instead buy, see, an anti-fatigue map for your standing desk setup, or a refrigerator water filter, or a Harlequin romance novel during that same Amazon session, a small percentage of those purchases will go to help the show. Thank you to all who help pay the bills around here by using the Amazon affiliate links. It really makes a difference. I've always tried to be ethical in my reviews that I do for the NoSilicast. If I've received a unit or software for free, I tell you that up front. I also tell you that I believe my reviews are not influenced by whether I paid for a product or not. Human nature probably causes a shift even for me, but I really try to fight against that instinct. I think I'm not so much influenced by the free factor as I am by whether I get to know the person who gave it to me. If they're a faceless company who just asked if I wanted a review unit or not, and I never interact with a human, it's much easier to be snarky in a review. But if I've gone back and forth with someone and they become my little friend, I might choose slightly less inflammatory words for my complaints about a product. Instead of, you know what I truly hate about this? I might write, this product could be vastly improved if. Just a slight change of tone if I get to know someone. Now, I have received truly awful software in the past and some bad hardware. And in those cases, I simply don't do a review at all. Instead, I send feedback directly to the vendor with specifics on what I believe they need to improve before I would ever consider talking about their product. Well, this week, I was approached by a company, which shall remain unnamed, to have the opportunity to review their newest hardware. I'd worked with the company before, and I did indeed have a little friend there. The little friend had suggested that I would be one of the people to get a free unit for test for their newest product. I was really excited to do it because I truly liked another product of theirs that I had paid for. But when the official invite came, it was not an offer I could accept. The offer was this. I buy the unit from Amazon with my own money. Then I write an Amazon review. I take a screenshot of the review and then I send it back to the company, the screenshot, and then they'd reimburse me for the cost of the item. Yeah, that would be a no. I was told that it didn't have to be a good review, that I could say what I really thought. But doesn't that whole deal just sound kind of icky? Doesn't it sound like an approach that would really cause people to send in only good reviews? Well, my own ethics would not let me comply with this request, but I didn't have to rely on my own internal sense of right and wrong. I went hunting, and as I suspected, this is against the guidelines for Amazon reviews. Here's what they say. Creating, modifying, or posting content in exchange for compensation of any kind, including free or discounted products, refunds, or reimbursement on or behalf of anyone else. Offering compensation or requesting compensation, including free or discounted products, in exchange for creating, modifying, or posting content. So it's against the policies for me to receive it, and it's against the policy for them to send it. Now, Amazon used to allow incentivized reviews, but they stopped that practice back in 2016. A company called Review Meta conducted a study of over 7 million reviews on Amazon around that time, and they looked at the effect of these incentivized reviews. I love data analysis as much as the next girl, so I thought it'd be really interesting to look at. In Review Meta's study, they found, or it said, it indicated that the average rating for products with incentivized reviews was higher than non-incentivized reviews. That is, a 4.74 average rating versus a 4.36 average rating out of 5 stars. Now, that's only a difference of 0.38 stars, and that doesn't sound like much, but it turns out that small change moved products from an average of 54th percentile to 94th percentile, which would definitely have them get noticed. Another finding of the Review Meta study was that incentivized reviewers are 12 times less likely to give a 1-star rating than non-incentivized reviews, and almost 4 times less likely to leave a critical review in general. Review Meta dug even deeper. Since 7 million plus reviews have to be across vastly different products, they looked at products that had at least 10 incentivized reviews and 10 non-incentivized reviews. That gave them a sample set of 251 products with a total of over 600,000 reviews. With this control in place, the spread was less, but the incentivized reviewers still gave 0.29 stars higher on average. 86% of products received a higher average rating from their incentivized reviews than their non-incentivized reviews. Now, one of the times Dr. Gary was on Chit-Chat Across the Pond to talk about memory, we discussed the fallacy of self-perception. We talked about a few studies that have been done that show that well over 50% of drivers believe they're better than average drivers. I gotta say, this Review Meta study really gives me pause on whether I'm truly unbiased when I receive products for free. I have made the choice to accept products for review for free, and I don't plan on changing that. It would be very expensive to do everything I do and pay for every single product. I suggest that you look at my reviews of free products, though, with a more critical eye than usual based on these numbers. I'll do my best to be unbiased, and perhaps I'm one of the very few who are not, but that's probably self-delusion, don't you think? Well, after I posted this story, George from Tulsa reminded me that Amazon does have a method for reviewers to be able to write reviews and receive free products. The program is called Amazon Vine. The idea is to help new products get up in the rankings, but for it to be done in a way that isn't sullied by these ethical questions. The way it works is Amazon chooses people to participate in the program by looking at the reviewer ranks. You know, do they get a lot of positive upvotes for their reviews? They choose these people and they call them Vine Voices. They even get a little badge next to their name that says Vine Voices. Then companies provide products to Amazon at a fee. I tried to find it on Amazon's site how much the fee was, but I found it on a bunch of other sites and it was thousands of dollars to be allowed to submit a product to the Vine program. Anyway, then Amazon connects the appropriate set of Vine Voices for that product category to do the reviews. Now, as I read about this program, I've realized that Amazon is basically getting people to work for them. That's cool, of course, but I kind of prefer to have my own voice on my own platform. Tying your enjoyment on the internet to any one platform often ends in sadness for you when the rules change and the platform disappears. George and others challenge my rule that I don't review truly bad products, like I mentioned. I understand his point. He wants to make sure Nocilla castaways don't accidentally buy bad products they could have avoided if I had done a bad review about them. I haven't changed my mind on it, though. It takes a lot of time and effort to write the reviews I do. So to write up bad products, that'd mean I'd have to go through them step by step, be fair in pointing out what isn't horrible about them, and then suffer through the really bad parts in detail. That doesn't sound like any fun for me at all. You know, I volunteered to do this for you guys, and having fun is my main goal. I think it would be an interesting podcast theme, though, if someone else wants to start it, to only review horrible products. I wouldn't listen to it, though. I remember when we had little kids, we just didn't have nice stuff. I mean, what was the point, right? Everything was going to be covered in jelly and thrown around without discrimination. But now, our youngest child, Kyle, is 27, and he hardly ever throws his toys in the house anymore. These days, we sort of don't have a childproof house at all. In fact, we have cans of paint everywhere, and everything toxic from under the sinks is actually out in boxes at child height. What little we can control in the pandemonium of home remodeling is actually kind of nice stuff. You know, we got glass tables, delicate wood carvings my father made, and of course, our electronics. So when our grandson Forbes came to visit, I had to make a tough decision, and that was whether to let his little banana-smeared fingers touch my iPad. Of course, the little man who has stolen my heart got to play with the iPad while sitting in my lap, on my bed, in the middle of the bed. Anyway, I let him play with three apps I thought might be fun for you to have in your back pocket in case you ever have to entertain a little monster yourself. The first is called Bandimal. It's in all caps, B-A-N-D-I-M-A-L, from Yatatoy for $3.99 in the App Store. The idea of Bandimal is for your little angel to make music on an iPad while being entertained with funny animations. The interface on Bandimal is unique. You get three animals, each of which makes a different noise. Below the three animals is a timeline moving across over and over again. In that timeline area are eight vertical columns of five dots. If you tap and drag your finger down one of the columns of dots, that triggers the selected animal to honk or tweet or blat or some kind of noise. The farther down the column of dots you pull, the lower the pitch of the honk or tweet or blat. When the timeline hits one of your columns of dots, the honk or tweet or blat occurs when the animal selected goes through a very silly animation. I'm partial to the panda bear myself, whose face distorts when it makes the noise. My favorite distortion is when there are just three dots, because just as like his one eye bugs out and it's really funny, makes me laugh. Above the animals are three percussion instruments. Tapping on these changes what they do and can toggle each of them off. Between the three animals making all of these silly noises on a beat of eight and the percussion joining in, you'll have a delightful cacophony of sound before too long. In case the little one bores of making the lines to make the music change, they can drag across on each animal to change it into a new animal. I didn't explore them all, but there's a flipping turtle. That's not a euphemism for swearing. It really flips. There's a honking rooster, a wiggly snake, and a whale that blats in a way that makes me giggle every time. Along the bottom are two controls. One I can tell changes the background of the selected animal from day to night, but the other one just, I don't know, baffles me. I'm not exactly sure what it does. It appears to cause the animal to pause for maybe one beat and then maybe move forward again, perhaps to get it to be in the rhythm of the other ones. I'm not really sure. Maybe I'm not smart enough to play this game myself. Well, for a two-year-old, I think it was a little more complex than he could completely grasp. He did like the sounds and he enjoyed the animations, but I think as he gets a little older, he'll appreciate that he is changing the pitch of the sounds when he drags on the lines. As it was, he just seemed to like moving things around, but didn't ever seem to make the connection between those actions and the results on screen. Oddly, Bandimal is not accessible, and I can't think of a reason why not. Seems like an obvious miss to me. Maybe the visually impaired couldn't see the animations, but the music is the fun part. I thought it might be fun to let you to listen to the result of playing with the controls on Bandimal. Here, have a quick listen. That really low sound, that was the whale I was telling you about. I love that. Well, the next app Forbes and I tested for you is called The Piano from Impala Studios. I started with The Piano free, and I later on bought the pro version to remove the ads, but a little more about that later. Oddly, the free version has a period at the end of the name, so it's The Piano period when you search for it on your iPad. I don't know why it says that. Anyway, the piano is a great way to engage a child, but I had a lot of fun with it too. The piano opens with a nice piano keyboard, which looked pretty close to the size of standard piano keys. I got curious about whether they were actually the right size. Now, my friend Pat Dangler makes fun of me for digging deep on every subject, but I can't help myself. After a bit of research, I found a Wikipedia article about pianos which said the standard white piano keys are 23.5 millimeters wide. On my 12.9 inch iPad Pro, the keys on the piano were 18.5 millimeters wide, so they're only around 78% of full size. Then I thought, wait a minute, maybe they're a different size than the 9.7 inch iPad Pro. Well, I checked, and on the 9.7, they're even narrower at 17 millimeters, or 72% of full width. Glad we got that all settled and we know exactly how big the keys are. Oh, there's a hamburger menu on the left of the piano that reveals some really fun stuff. The very first thing I noticed was a slider at the top of the key of it to change the key size. Now, you might be thinking we did all that measuring for nothing, but now we get to do math with our measurements. The slider is a percentage, so if we want 23.5 millimeter wide keys like the standard and 100% on a 12.9 inch iPad Pro is 18.5 millimeters, how fast are the two trains going? Wait, that's not it. All right, 23.5 divided by 18.5 is 127%. Sadly, the piano slider only goes every 10%, so I had to settle for 130%, but that was within my margin of error. It looks like around 23 millimeters. I feel better now that I have the right size keys. Well, the speakers on iPads are fantastic now, so the piano actually sounds great even when Forbes is playing it. Across the top, above the keys, you can see which keys are showing of the full set of 88 keys. You can scroll across to change which set of keys you're playing, which is pretty cool. Fun for the kiddies to hear the different pitches. Okay, it was fun for me too. There's more fun under the hamburger menu. You can turn on note labels, so if you're learning the piano, you can see the notes A through G, or the notes and the octave number. Now, oddly, the black keys don't get any labels, so good luck figuring out that C-sharp and B-flat are the same darn key. All right, by now someone's asking themselves, if Allison doesn't know like music, why does she know something like that? Well, I'll have you know that I played piano for years. Of course, my mother told me that when my brother quit his lessons, she cried, but when I quit, she sighed with relief. She said I positively attacked the piano. With that mystery solved, let's just move along. Back in the hamburger menu, you can change the instrument from a classic grand piano to a xylophone or to a toy piano. I love the toy piano the best because it reminds me of the severely out-of-tune piano my mom had at her cottage on the lake when I was a young child. I also remember when Lindsay was a toddler and she was just not getting the concept of the mouse with our Mac 2C. We got her a program to play the piano, and she started just kind of flailing the mouse around on screen, clicking and flailing. There was no connection, no hand-eye coordination of what was going on. But then it hit one of the keys and a sound came out. It was like she'd been struck by lightning. She froze in place and then cautiously moved the mouse over and a different tone came out. She was instantly hooked and that hand to computer coordination translated to all of the other kids' apps we'd gotten her. Plus, you know, music, am I right? Well, on the right side of the keyboard in the piano, you'll see a record button and a play button. Yep, you can record your wee one's first effort so you can make a fortune when they're older and performing at Carnegie Hall. I think they play piano there, right? Well, you can name the recordings and easily share them out, including to the Files app for safekeeping. Here's my masterpiece. No stealing now. This is copyrighted material. No, that was not Forbes. That was me. That was my masterpiece. While Steve said I didn't do that good of a job, so he insisted, and I mean insisted, that I include his recording in the show. Well, I hope you're all really impressed with our musical prowess. Also under the hamburger menu, there's a very prominent button that says Forget Me. Below that button, it says your remote profile will be erased. I have no idea what private information they would have collected or how, because I didn't tell them anything. But don't you wish a lot of applications and services had a button just like that that just said Forget Me? That's all I want, right? I mentioned up front that I bought the version without ads. This is not an easy thing to accomplish. There are no in-app purchases in the piano. The Impala Studios website has a link to the free version, but they don't have a link to the version without ads. I don't know how they make money because they don't have the one that you actually pay for. I eventually found buried in a comment inside one of the responses to an App Store review that if you search for the Piano Pro Impala Studios, you can find it. Sure enough, that worked, but wouldn't a link to the description have been a wee bit easier? In any case, the Piano Pro is $3.99 in the App Store, and I'm giving you the direct link. I hope you'll unlock some musical talent in your young ones with the piano and fill your house with music, of a sort, like I did with Steve. Now, the app that entertained 2-year-old Forbes the longest was the drawing app for iPad called Procreate. I'm not going to do a full review of Procreate because its praises have been sung far and wide ever since it came out. Procreate is $10 for iPad from procreate.art. In the context of entertaining our tiny little guy, I can tell you it got squeals of joy. With Procreate, he could easily draw and paint on screen with his finger. As soon as he grew a tiny bit bored, I could change the color of his finger. Now, I said it exactly that way because my favorite part of playing with him with this was after he'd carefully painted on screen the first time, and I think it was blue, he turned his finger around and he looked very carefully at it as though trying to discern, why did blue just come out of my finger? I really like that. Well, when color exchange excitement wore off, I started changing the style of brush with which he was painting. He loved the different brushes. They're not just thick and thin and paint sprays. There are all sorts of unique shapes to be used. The smudge brush was actually one of his favorites, which simply kind of smeared what he'd already drawn. As much as he enjoyed Procreate, I think it would be even better for older kids. His dexterity at choosing brushes and colors is not quite there yet, and he definitely didn't grok the concept of changing brush sizes. It's a good investment at $10 because it'll continue to entertain him as he gets better at these things. I know people love Procreate for creating truly beautiful art, but the drawing Forbes made for me is just as precious. The bottom line is that these three apps kept a 2-year-old busy for nearly 20 minutes, and it was 20 minutes where I had to make sure the iPad was safe. But it was 20 minutes where he was creative and happy and not just watching a video or something like that. Now, I gotta go find me some screen cleaner. Well, this isn't going to be one of our longest shows. Did I mention that my grandson was with us for 4 days? Yeah, that kind of cut into my podcasting writing time. Anyway, that's going to wind us up for this week. Do not forget to send in your dumb questions like Linda Goucher did this week. You can send that and comments and suggestions. You can email me at allison@podfeet.com. If you're liking the Twitters, you can find me on Twitter at Podfeet. Now, remember, anything you're looking for starts with podfeet.com. If you want to contribute via Patreon, you say podfeet.com/Patreon. You want to join our Facebook group, podfeet.com/Facebook. Steve Davidson just did a fantastic post over on our Google Plus group at podfeet.com/Google Plus. If you want to join in the live chat, you can join that at podfeet.com/chat, like you're going to next on Wednesday the 12th, right? You're going to join us. You're going to be there. It's going to be awesome. 10 a.m. Pacific time. Join us in the chat at podfeet.com/chat. You want to find those Amazon affiliate links? podfeet.com/Amazon. And if you want to join in the fun of the live show, head on over to podfeet.com/live on Sunday nights at 5 p.m. Pacific time and join the friendly and enthusiastic No Silly Castaways. Thanks for listening and stay subscribed.